The way you see a place depends on where you're standing. Take Tijuana. It sits at Mexico's northwestern edge and the United States' southwestern edge. Depending on where you stand, it's either north or it's south. Tijuana directly borders San Diego. In practical terms, it's one metropolitan ecosystem split by a national line. Families, media, language, and culture have flowed back and forth for generations. Mexico and the United States are constantly visible and audible to each other there. People grow up listening to both countries at once. The entanglement between Tijuana and the United States dates back to Prohibition in the U.S., when Americans crossed south for gambling, alcohol, and entertainment that was illegal back home. By the 70s, Tijuana was a city of migrants. People arrived there from across Mexico, seeking opportunity near the border. Culturally, Tijuana was a rich pastiche of elements from both sides of the border. So a kid growing up there could watch Mexican and U.S. television. And at the same time, home life might include rancheras and boleros. To be norteño, or norteña, in other words, was to live in multiple dimensions at once. Out of that dusty amalgam, Julieta Venegas emerged. Welcome to The Third Story. I'm Leo Sidran. Maybe it makes sense that someone raised in a city suspended between identities would resist fixed categories herself. Julieta Venegas has spent much of her career moving fluidly between musical worlds. She describes herself as non-genre. Like Tijuana itself, Julieta seems most comfortable in the in-between. She was born in 1970 in Long Beach, California, and raised in Tijuana. Her parents, both photographers, enrolled their children in music and art classes, partly to keep them occupied and out of trouble. Julieta quickly showed herself to be a gifted, deeply intuitive musician who learned to play all kinds of instruments credibly. And at 21, following the same intuition that had pulled her toward music in the first place, she left Tijuana for Mexico City with no clear plan, just a conviction that she needed to go. It was a leap that changed everything. Within a few years of moving, Julieta was making music that sounded unlike almost anything else in Latin pop. At a moment when Latin rock was largely male-driven and Latin pop often rewarded bigger gestures and bigger personas, Julieta arrived with conversational language. She played accordion, piano, acoustic guitar. She brought folk textures and emotional precision. At the same time, she embraced technology, drum machines and samplers, the sound of the moment. Puedo llegar a ser la perfecta maravilla que entra por tu vida. She released her first two albums, Aquí and Buen Invento, in quick succession. And then, in 2003, came the album Sí, which included the hits Andar Conmigo. Dime si tú quisieras andar conmigo. Oh, oh, cuéntame si quisieras andar conmigo. Oh, oh. Lento. Algo está cambiando. Que a simple vista no se ve, pero siento que hay en mí algo que está cambiando. Sí turned her into one of the defining voices of Latin music in the 2000s, and Julieta helped redefine what a female artist in Latin music could sound like. She helped make room for women who wrote their own songs and didn't have to choose between alternative credibility and mainstream popularity. Julieta herself won multiple Latin Grammys and one Grammy. She sold millions of records across Latin America and Spain, and she even enjoyed a recent mainstream crossover moment with the song Lo Siento Bebé, which she sang with Bad Bunny and the producer Tiny, and it has racked up over a billion streams. And throughout all this, she never stopped sounding like herself. She spent nearly three decades expanding the possibilities of what Spanish language songwriting can be. More nuanced, more porous, musically and culturally. And now, After 3 decades of resisting fixed categories, Julieta is turning back toward the place where that sensibility began. This year she returns with Norteña, an album that turns back toward the border city where all of that began.
Me siento norteada, perdida en el sur, un poco mareada, tan triste y cansada, buscando la luz.
She describes it not as a tribute to a particular genre of music, but rather to the feeling of growing up on the border. Norteña was imagined as a series of duets written largely in collaboration with the Mexican songwriter David Aguilar. The album considers questions of friendship, estrangement, loss, nostalgia, and celebration, and features appearances by a long list of Latin alternative royalty, from Meme de Real to Natalia Lafourcade. And while this is happening, at the same time she's publishing Norteña, Memorias del Comienzo. It's a memoir that also examines her early life and the intuition that drove her in the first place. As the memoir and album developed in parallel, she says, everything began coming together in stereo. We spoke recently and talked about what it means to be a Norteña and the long journey that led her out of Tijuana and ultimately led her back home. Third-story.com is the place to visit the archive. Hundreds of deep dives like this one, including conversations with some of Julieta's friends like Natalia Lafourcade and Jorge Drexler. Check out the Substack, where you'll find all the latest episodes, writings, and musings. It's leosidran.substack.com. And remember that we are made in collaboration with WBGO Studios, where I not only make this podcast, but also file daily culture dispatches on the Art of the Story segment. Recent episodes there have included short conversations with more of Julieta's friends like Ana Tijoux and Kevin Johansson. Julieta is on tour this summer and will be performing at Summer Stage in New York on July 29th. Meanwhile, I'll be on tour in Europe for most of June and July. Find me with my father, Ben Sidran, in New York, Paris, London, Barcelona, Madrid in June, and then on tour in Spain with Leo and Leo, my project with Spanish singer and actress Leonor Watling, in July. All the dates are available at leosidran.com. So, if you happen to be nearby, come say hi, si quieres andar conmigo. Here's me and Julieta Venegas talking it down on Zoom last month. Julieta, it's such a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, thank you.
Can you tell me what the Norteña identity was for you when you were growing up, what it meant to you to be Norteña, what the cultural experience of that was?
I'm from Tijuana, which is a border city. And I mean, we definitely had this mix, you know, like I think all border cities, but I grew up like in a mix of US and Mexico all together at the same time. I always studied in Mexico. School was always in Mexico, but we'd watch TV from the US. We didn't have internet then, so we did a lot of TV, a lot of US radio. I think I listened to a mix of what we listened to on the radio and what my parents listened to at home, no? And musically speaking. And it's always been a mix. For me, being from the North is just very much by national thing, you know? You kind of live in two countries at the same time because you have, I mean, right now my family lives, part of them live in San Diego, part of them live in Tijuana. So it's always like a mix. We're crossing like every day when we're there. And it's always, that's basically what my life was like there in Tijuana. And when I came to Mexico City, that never left me. I've always felt like I've always carried Tijuana with me, like being from the border, you know, being Norteña in Mexico is also different than being from the South, being from Mexico City or being from Aguascalientes or Oaxaca. It's just different, you know. So I think the identity in the North is very different than the one in the South. But what I can say about this album is that it's very much inspired in all that popular music that we would listen to in my house with my family, because both my parents have always been very musical in the sense that they have music all the time. It's like there's music happening in my house when I was growing up all the time. So we'd have the radio on one side, which was American radio, but then we'd have, you know, like Juan Gabriel and La Sonora Santanera and, you know, the cumbias and the parties and everything. So I think that mix very much describes the way my life has been in a way.
Did they encourage you to play music? I know one of the questions you've been asking yourself lately is, how did I become a musician? What is your conclusion? What's your answer? How did you become a musician?
My parents wanted us to not watch so much TV, so they would make us like study different, you know, like different dance and dancing and about ballet dance and all that stuff. But then when they discovered this piano teacher that they really loved because she was very beautiful and generous, and they had gone to take pictures to one of her concerts, and they were like, we want our kids to study with her. She's just so amazing. And she was very important for me. My parents, I think they didn't actually say, like, we want you to do music. It's like, we want you to, you know, go and do other things that are not like sitting around the house. And we all discovered at the same time that maybe I loved music so much. I loved doing it so much because I wasn't conscious about it. They weren't conscious about it. But I think we all went like, oh, look, she likes it and she's good at it. Like, and I was also, and my teacher is the one, the first one who noticed it. She spoke to my dad one day and she's like, I think the other sisters aren't really interested in the classes, but I think Julieta is, and maybe she should go on, but maybe they should, they don't want to, you know, they don't want to be here. And that was really important for me because I, for the first time, I felt like someone saw me, you know, we were so many kids, there was such a mess. We were doing all these things. And all of a sudden somebody looked over and said, you have this, you have something. And for me, that was like the, I think the seed, you know, that eventually grew into something else. And what my parents did give me definitely is a love for music, like a love of having music around all the time. I mean, my mom is always singing something. She's even now, I mean, and we were growing up, she would be in the car and she was always singing a song. She was always, her way of living with us and with living in the world is like with melodies, you know, she's always singing something. And definitely that gave me a love for music that has nothing to do with professionalism, but it has to do with this thing that comes from inside and you want music to be a part of your day, you know.
How many siblings are you and where are you on the list of in the birth order?
When I was growing up, we were four. First my older brother, then a sister, and then my twin and myself. And then a few years later, we had two more sisters, younger ones, you know, one like 9 years later, and then the other one like 8 years after that. My mom was having babies for a long time, but it was very separated, like for a few years. But she was like, oh, the pilón. And then she had another pilón. You know, she had two pilones. I did share with my younger sisters for a bit at home. And I lived with them for a bit. But I left when I was 21 and they were very young. So I feel like the time when I was with the first camada, you know, when you say the first group in the book, I spoke mostly about them because they're the ones I'm talking about, like my, I don't know, like my relationship to music, but also like my first years. And that was very much shared with our brother and my two sisters. Now we're five women and one man.
But you have a twin sister.
I have a twin sister. Yes.
And so
she's a photographer.
She's a photographer.
Yes.
That's always interesting to me when a set of twins, one becomes a musical or an artist and the other one doesn't. I guess if she's a photographer, she's also artistic in her way.
Yeah, and also my dad is a photographer. So there's this thing with photography in my family. But yeah, my sister's always been a photographer. I think in the book, there's a lot of pictures by her. And in the album, the pictures in the album are going to be hers also. We already took them, so they're hers. She was my reporter. I was her model when she started taking pictures. And I think we both defined what we wanted to do and we wanted to be at the same time when we were teenagers. And she discovered photography and I discovered music. And it was like, we were both living in this, like, wow, discovering who we wanted to be and sharing in that, which was pretty wonderful, you know. And now we're sharing a different moment in our lives and definitely sharing always our art, you know, always, you know, the fact that we both love it and we both do what we love. And so it's very important for us. In our relationship also.
You talk about her as being your reporter. And before you said that, I was thinking about how songs are a kind of reporting or snapshot of a person's life. And as I was thinking back on the first records of yours that I heard so many years ago, I'm a little bit behind you, but not so far behind you in age. So I feel like so many people, I sort of grew up next to you or following along with you. I wonder if you think of your songs as a kind of reporting on your life and the things that you're thinking about at any given time in your life.
I don't think they're, because I'm never very explicit about what's going on. But internally, I know where the songs are from, what was happening to me at the same, you know, at that moment. But I think that also happens with pictures. You know, you see a picture and maybe you remember where you were in that moment. Maybe you don't. But for me, songs are very emotional. So, yeah, I do sometimes I do connect them to certain times and where I was living, where I wrote it, what was happening in my emotional life, where I was. So yeah, in a way they are snapshots, very personal ones, but I think that if somebody listens to them from the outside, they're not gonna, I mean, it's not like I'm so explicit about what was going on. I think the songs are stories, but to me, they do express a certain moment, each one of them.
maybe it's fair to say, particularly with this project, you know, first of all, it seems like this collection of songs came together more or less around the same time that you were working on a memoir, which I would imagine put you in some kind of a, I don't know, state of mind of looking backwards or looking at the trajectory of your life.
It was actually the other way around. I started imagining this album like a few years ago. I think from, 2020, when I always wanted to do this album. An album that I think is like, or what I imagine as popular music, as Norteño popular music, the music that I grew up with, that isn't necessarily Norteño polka tradition or anything. It's more like inspired in Los Tigres and in Juan Gabriel and in all this music that we would listen to at home. And when I wrote the first song with my friend David Aguilar, we wrote Tiempos Dorados, which is the first song that came out, the first single. It talks about memory and it talks about letting go of just knowing that things are very fleeting. You know, they happen for an instant and they're gone. And that's something we need to accept during our lives, like in all the course of our lives, you know, how things you let go all the time.
Que vuelvan los tiempos dorados, los dulces futuros que tanto soñamos. Que vuelva el misterio y el aburrimiento, el no saber nada.
I love writing and I've always written diaries. And when we wrote that song, there's a line in that song that describes an image of my childhood. When we would go to San Felipe and we'd do these road trips to go to San Felipe and we'd see all this desert and all this like sea. And that image, I said, oh my God, this is a memoir.
Que vuelvan los viajes sin rumbo, las hojas en blanco, las flores del mar. Tú dime a qué mundo irías si todo algún día volviera a empezar.
I felt like that was a place for it, and I had been reading a lot of Baja California, and I think history and Fernando Jordán and a bunch of writers from Tijuana, and I wanted to read this, and everything started like, you know, to get mixed up and connected. And the song started connecting with the memoir and the memoir with what I was reading. And everything started to come together in stereo, I say, because it all happened like at the same time. And although I do mention the album in the book for a moment, it's not about the album. It's more about the same thing that the album is about, which is what I emotionally remember of my life, you know, of who I am.
Yes. You say in one of the songs, Terca, you say, and I don't know if it's true or if it's an emotional truth, that you say to your father, I'm moving to the city. And he says, why do you want to do that? For what reason? Did that happen?
It did happen. That is definitely a real story, a true story.
Mi padre me decía, niña, te vas a perder. El día que me fui a la ciudad, llorando, preguntaba, ¿para qué es que tú te vas? Le dije, ¿pa' qué me voy a quedar?
I mean, the song is definitely about following your intuition. And during my life, I've always taken very drastic decisions that I don't really understand the moment that I'm doing them. I just know that I cannot decide anything else, either leaving a band or moving to Mexico City, which was, I think, the biggest decision in my life to come here. And at the same time, it was very tough for me because I didn't know what I was going for. I just jumped, you know, and it was like, and my dad was very strict and he was very scared. He was very scared about what would happen to me. He was like, he thought I was going to be like super drug addict and all this because he was like, oh my God, musicians. It's like, oh no, my daughter can't be this. It's like, what are you going to do? It's like, you're going to go to a cabaret. That's the way he would call places where people would play rock. It was very funny. And he was very scared about what would happen to me, and he didn't accept the idea of me moving to Mexico City. And that song is about that, you know, about following something that you can't explain, but is definitely a decision. You know, sometimes you have to make decisions like that. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know that I have to do it. You know,
considering that you grew up on the border and you were as much facing to the north as you were to the south. You had your back to the south in some ways. Did you ever consider going to the States instead of going to Mexico City?
Well, I do like San Francisco, and I did think about it for a minute, but Mexico City just seems so glamorous, you know? Mexico City, to me, was I mean, in my family, my dad was always like glamorizing Mexico, and he was totally into Mexican news. Everything was Mexico. And the US was like, oh, you know, decadence, and all these, you know, women would lose themselves. It was like, it was very funny because we're from Tijuana, which is like the city that people consider the place where women get lost. And it's like, my dad saw it all the way around. Like, I don't know. And so Mexico was always like glamorous to us. It was like, oh my God, everything that happened in Mexico City was like magic. And when I went to Mexico City for the first time, I was very young. We were 8 years old with my sisters, and my parents sent us to see an aunt and an uncle that we had here in Mexico City. And I always felt that my identity was completed in Mexico City more than the U.S., even though I grew up with the daily life close to the U.S. and speaking English and watching English TV. I felt like my identity was definitely connected to Mexico City, and Mexico City was everything. When you see the pyramids and you see it was like, this is who I am. This is what it completed who I was, because we always imagined it. Tijuana is very far, and being from the north, you feel very separated from Mexico City. It's like you imagine Mexico City more than you actually see it, because it's very far, you know? And so for me, it was very clear where I wanted to be when I came to Mexico City. It was like, this is a place. I didn't even know if I was going to do anything like career wise. I just felt like the city, this amazing, huge place, was a place where I needed to be, you know, that it was more physical for me. Like, I want to be a part of this place. I don't even know what's going to happen with my life, but this is where I need to be right now.
Then there was a period where you were not living so much in Mexico City, and you were living in Buenos Aires. And once again, you felt this sort of magnetic pull back to Mexico City.
Yes. Yeah, I was in Buenos Aires for 8 years. And I think this project was sort of what brought me back. I mean, when I finally realized that I needed to be back, you know, because the decision to stay in Buenos Aires was mostly for my daughter, because she went very young and her dad lives there. And, you know, it was like, I think I should stay here, and she seems happy, so maybe I should just, you know, hang around and wait till she's 18 and then go back. But then she started telling me that she wanted to come back. And I think this album when I started, you know, obsessing with Baja California and obsessing with my family and all these songs and everything, the stories and everything that started coming together, I realized that the thing is that I wanted to come back. You know, it was like, this is where I want to be, you know, this is and it did pull me back. And although after the pandemic, I was very much more connected to Tijuana, and I reconnected with friends. I would go to Tijuana mostly. I wouldn't come so much to Mexico City. Coming back, I realized that this is my city. I mean, I came here when I was 21. And so this is like where I've lived most of my adult life. And I think Mexico City is always so incredible. It's still glamorous. You know, it's even more glamorous now. I mean, it's like it keeps getting more amazing. And I keep discovering it in so many different ways. And I think living away from Mexico and coming back here for me has been like rediscovering my relationship to the city and my relationship to being from the north, living in Mexico City, because it's very different to be from here than to be from other places in the country and living here. So it's all a beautiful, I'm really happy just being back. You know, I'm very happy.
Throughout your career, you've been very open to collaborations. This record in particular has a lot of collaborations. You sing a lot of songs as duets in all kinds of contexts. Do you think that was intentional? Were you aware of that as it was coming together, that you were singing so many songs in collaboration and as duets with people?
Yeah, I've never done so many collaborations in one of my albums. I've always done them with other artists. But yeah, this is definitely intentional. I mean, when we started writing with David, when I realized that Tiempos Dorados was the first song to this album that I'd been imagining for so long. Well, actually, the first song that I wrote for this album, I'd written it in 2020 when I was writing. And I was imagining this album, and I was thinking, one day I will do this album inspired in the north and just norteño. And I started writing this cumbia, and I imagined Bronco. I imagined Lupe, the voice of Lupe from Bronco, singing it with me. And that song, I didn't finish it that time. It took a long time to finish it. And that song is also part of the album. But I felt like I wrote the songs.
Volver a ti.
Exactly. Yeah. I I wrote the songs as duets. I didn't want it to be like, come and sing the second verse and, you know, then we'll sing together. I wanted it to be dialogues. And I wanted to, and that's when we wrote Tiempos Dorados and I realized what we were doing. I was like, let's definitely write duets. So the songs are very difficult for me to sing by myself because it would be like, you know, separating myself into identities, like, you know, this and you answer this, because it's not a song that I wrote to sing by myself and then add somebody else. They're thought of as duets. So for me, it was part of the, what I was, you know, what we were experimenting with this album. Like, let's do it. Let's do a bunch of duets. Let's just, you know, write. I mean, we didn't think like, let's do a bunch of duets, but when we started writing, I would say, okay, let's imagine what this person is going to answer me. And then, you know, that was super fun. I think that is a very important part of the album. There's only one song that I didn't write as a duet, but I wanted to do it as a duet in the end, which is Amigas with Rusi, because I felt it had to be sung with, you know, by two friends. It had to be like that because it's a song about two friends breaking up. So it had to be, you know, sang like that. Fuimos mejores amigas hasta que un día pensamos distinto. No supe leer lo que tú querías y no hice nada aunque me dolió.
I really like that song, and it reminded me of, I have two friends in Madrid who wrote a book last year called Amistad. I don't know if you know this book, but it's an essay on friendship.
I think I've heard of that book.
It's a series of interviews. It's Jacobo Bergareche and Mariano Zigman. And they did interviews with people about friendship and how friendship operates. And I saw one of the presentations of the book recently where Jacobo was talking about how if your marriage ends, you take time off from work and that's accepted. And if you lose a loved one, you take time off from work. But it's not so common to call into work and say, I'm sorry, I can't come to work. My best friend has stopped talking to me. I'm sorry. I've just lost my friend. And the idea that our friendships are so important to us, and yet we don't really have the language or the tools to process the loss of a friendship. And then I heard this song, and I think it's really lovely and sad. And you don't have that many songs about friendships and the birth of a friendship and the death of a friendship and the evolution of it. Where's my friend? You've changed. You talk differently. You seem different. Yeah. Like, I love that theme as a song.
Yeah, I think so too. I wrote it because I lost two friends, one because she died and one because I lost her. We broke up or something like that. And I felt like I didn't have the song to express it. And also with Mariana, who I sing it with, we stopped speaking for a few years. And so for us, it was like, I mean, we had already like reconnected a long time ago, but it was like very natural for us to sing it together because we actually had lived through that, you know, like not talking to each other and then talking to each other again. It was great. And yeah, I totally agree with you. There's not enough songs about that because I think it's harder to accept in the long run losing a friend than losing, I don't know, like a couple, you know. I think for me at least, because I feel like friendship is something we feel like, you know, sometimes we don't take care of it enough. And if we don't take care of it enough, it's not going to hold. You have to take care of it just the way you do with love, you know. So I think it's for me, it was important to talk about that also in the album.
That's not the only song about friendship. I mean, you actually have two songs about friendship.
There's happy, not happy friendship, but it's like a moment where friendship holds you together, you know, because it's a sad song about life and existentialism. And it's not, because it's not about, you know, I broke up with my man. Let's talk about that. No, it's more like I'm lost, you know, and, you know, I'm super lost and I don't know what to do. And your friend says, hey, it's all going to be okay. You know, that's for me, that was important also. Tengo que contarte algo, lo traigo desde hace tiempo y solo a ti te lo puedo decir. I'm glad I have like both different aspects of friendship, no, there.
Yeah, and you're right. Again, it's not about love that you have one friend saying, I think what I'm experiencing is sadness, and then the other friend responds and says, I think maybe you're right. You all what you're describing is sadness. No sé si estoy triste, pero es muy parecido a lo que cuentan cuando hablan de alguien que perdió su rumbo y no encuentra por dónde regresar.
we're out of words sometimes, and you just need a friend to hug you and, you know, have a few drinks or whatever. Yeah. I was always telling Natalia that she sings a song with me, like, I feel like this is a song that has to be in a cantina. It has to be with a couple of mezcales. It has to be like two friends talking about life. It was great to do it with Natalia because that's the way we talk to each other. We say, amiga, yeah, amiga, you know, amiga.
Amiga, no te sientas sola. Comprendo lo que estás sintiendo. Y la verdad, también he estado ahí.
So it was cool to be able to do it with a friend, you know, with someone who I admire so much and who I consider a friend.
There's a kind of a sweetness and almost an innocence in the directness of the dialogue in some of these songs, and that's certainly one of them. There's no cynicism about that conversation, to be that honest with
someone. No irony there. It's just a situation when you're just super sad. And and when we started writing it, that song, I was actually thinking of this song that Peter Gabriel did with Kate Bush so long ago. And I've always loved the dialogue in that song, you know? I always thought that he's totally depressed, you know? He's like lost.
Is it the song where she says, don't give up? The thing,
don't give up, saying, exactly.
Don't give up. No fight left or so it seems. I am a man whose dreams have all deserted. I've changed my face, I've changed my name. But no one wants you when you lose. Don't give up, cause you have friends.
I always wanted to tell that story. I mean, that's like one song that I always felt like, how do you tell that story? And I would like to do it. And this time when we were already doing duets, I was like, I think this is something we need to talk about. We need to go through this one also. And when we started it, it sounded really depressing because we were like, maybe we're like going up like overboard. But I was like, we have to go all the way. We have to finish it and see where it goes. But I think definitely this story, I need to get the lasso around it. You know, we need to work on it. And it was actually great because working with David, he's just such a great writing companion. He's incredible. So every time I would throw like something, we'd go for it. And he was just great with like, let's go in this direction. Let's go after this idea, you know? So that was great.
The song that I, as I understand it, maybe came out today, the day that we're talking, is La Línea, which is...
Yes, it came out yesterday. Actually.
Yesterday. Although people listening to this interview don't know what today is because it's not...
Oh, that's true. That's true.
That is a song that I think, without being overtly political, has a subtext of being of separation.
Definitely.
If there is a song that is a snapshot of what's happening in the world today, maybe it's that one.
Una línea nos separa desde hace tanto tiempo. Una línea que me impide poder llegar a ti.
Yeah, it's crazy because as I was being inspired by everything that I lived in Tijuana and that I saw in Tijuana, I always saw people being deported and migrants going to Tijuana and maybe some of them staying in Tijuana, some of them crossing the border. But when I wrote it, it wasn't as awful as it is right now. I think now being deported doesn't have anything to do with doing something legal or maybe, you know, not. It doesn't have anything to do with that. Right now, we know that it's much heavier and awful, more awful than anything that we'd ever seen. Although this has always happened, people have always been deported. But I think that what I'm touching is more like the emotional part of it, the families that are separated and what happens. I was very much, when I was reading about Tijuana and everything, and I remembered El Parque de la Amistad, you know, the park that there is in Tijuana, where Playas de Tijuana is, where the beach is. There's this park on the American side that people go there and they would get together with their families that were in Mexico. So they would get together in this park and one was on the American side and one was on the Mexican side. And it was a way to see each other. And there's something about this park that inspired me in the song. Like, you know, the fact that you're separated by someone from something that is, you know, imagine like the border and created, you know, man created or whatever. But the fact that you're separated by from someone you love, what do you do with that? I mean, what do you do with that sadness? You can only have hope that you're going to be able to be with that person again, because That's what the song is about. And that's, and it was very emotional for me yesterday that I had this conversation with Yaritza, Yaritza y su Esencia, Yaritza and her brothers. We were talking about the song, and she sings a very emotional part, which is the moment when someone is separated. And she had been, she told me, I didn't know this when I invited her to do the song. She had been separated from her brother. She, her older brother and sister are born in Mexico, and he had to go back. So it was, for her, it was, they had to be separated like for 9 months because he had to go back to Mexico, and he'd never been to Mexico, and they lived through that. So from yesterday, we were having this conversation, and I was like, I can't believe this. It's like, I intuitively felt that Yaritza was a person to interpret this song with, because I know that they're migrants. I know that their families are migrants. And I felt like her emotional way of expressing in her voice was very much someone that I wanted to be present in the song. But I had no idea that her story was so close to the song. And I mean, I felt like, yeah, I'm sure her parents are Mexican and I know that about them, you know, but I didn't know that they actually lived through it. So it was very, yesterday we spoke and it was very emotional to talk about it and very somehow healing to be able to say, you know, how they felt with the song, how they felt about participating in it. And it was pretty incredible, actually. I hope this song is healing in a way, you know, that's what I expect from it. I don't expect it to be a political song, although I know in a way, as you're saying, it does touch on something that is political. But I think that sometimes when we talk of numbers and of people moving, we don't realize how incredibly awful it is for a family to be separated. You know, how it must be. I can only imagine what that must be like. I mean, I've lived in one country and the other, but I've chosen to do it. I've never had to leave because I was obligated to do it. And so it's something that I wanted to express in a song because I felt like I hope this can give someone somehow hope, you know, this song.
Yeah, and also, I think, as you say, behind every statistic is a human life, you know, exactly. And to remember that that's, we talk about the numbers and we talk about the statistics, but these are affecting real people.
Exactly.
I want to ask you a question I've always wanted to ask you, and just talking to you now and understanding how comfortable you are in English, it maybe is how I am thinking about framing the question. From the first time I heard you sing, I felt that you were very free with the way you would allow yourself to reorganize the syntax of Spanish, place accents in unusual ways, just in subtle ways. Like, tan mala, 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 like to be able to take a word and place the accent not necessarily where the accent would normally be. Is that something you have felt, that you have a little bit of flexibility or freedom to, like, maybe mold the language to serve a melody or to be more musical? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I feel like I'm not so, I'm very respectful of accents, actually, because I want the words to be understood well.
Yeah.
But sometimes I do use it, you know, use a word that maybe I've used during the song, like Mala Memoria Hazard. But when you hear the rest of the song, there's not like so much playfulness with the accents. I'm very respectful of them. I'm like very much like, because I want the words to be understood. And I'm very much, when I write a song, I'm very touchy about that, actually. I mean, So I did it, and maybe I would have to recheck my older songs, yeah, which I haven't done in a while, but at least in the last few years, I'm very like touchy about like the accents and all that.
I don't mean to touch a sensitive spot. And again, I could be wrong.
It's okay. It's not. I'm interested to revise my songs now because I want to know if I did it, because I have to have a conversation with the younger me about what were you thinking, you know?
Well, the conversation with the younger you, I mean, what is that conversation like when you look back at your, seriously, what is the conversation that you have with the younger you today?
Well, it's funny because now when I wrote the memoir, I was obviously thinking of my younger self. So it was actually very interesting to encounter myself because I've written diaries since I'm like 14. So it was actually really interesting. I mean, I only did a little bit. I don't actually base my memoir in diaries, but it did open a couple of them, and it's really incredible to do that. I would recommend everybody to write diaries. If they haven't done it, start doing it now, because when you open a diary that you've written like 20 years ago, and it's like, I would read a couple of words and just be transported to like, you know, like the, like, oh my God, this is like super heavy. It was too intense. For me, it's actually too intense to read my older diaries, but it was actually a good exercise. And I think it's a great exercise to write diaries. But what I realized was that I was very insecure, very insecure, very low self-esteem. And it took me a very long time to really believe in what I was doing creatively. I was always very intuitive, including like the style that I was doing. I wasn't doing rock. But I've always like followed a very like direct, like when I moved to Mexico City, the same with music, you know, it's just like, oh, this is what I have to do. And I don't even know what it is, but I just have to do it. You know, that kind of thing. It's always been like discovering what's happening when I'm sitting while doing it. And that's the way that I also learned to sing, just by sitting and singing the song that I was writing. And that's how I learned to play the accordion. I was writing the song in the accordion, so I would practice playing it. And so I've always been like very hands-on, you know, and that's something that maybe I didn't recognize when I was younger. And I feel like I still do the same thing. I still need to sit there and just kind of like, oh, get my hands on things and just do it, you know? So it's actually, you know, I guess I'm very much nicer with myself now, I guess, you know, than I used to be. But it's been quite a trip to do this. I mean, this whole I consider it like a memory project, you know, like everything, you know, together, the music and the words and everything. So it's been actually, I think I did a lot of therapy in Buenos Aires, because everybody loves to do therapy. And that helped me a lot, actually, with actually deciding to do this. You know, I think that kind of helped me like let go of things that wouldn't let me like just get to the thing that I wanted to do. And so I think that definitely helped me a lot.
You know, you said that you were insecure. Was there a moment where you realized, I don't have to be so insecure or so hard on myself? Was it the therapy and being in Buenos Aires, do you think?
I think definitely the therapy and being in Buenos Aires, because that is definitely something you have to work on for years. It's very hard to not be insecure. I mean, I think I'm not so insecure now. I don't even know if I like not being, you know, at all. And I'm very insecure sometimes, but I think I know what I'm capable of now. I mean, I'm getting old. So if I didn't know this now, it'd be like, oh my God, there's something good about age. And it's definitely that you can know that who you are, you know, and what you're capable of and what your limits are also, because I think that even if I can say now that I'm less insecure, I do know my limits. And I'm very humble about that. I'm very humbled with what I can say. This is where I go. This is, you know, I go till here. And then after that, you know, I want help. I want people around me. I want a team. And that's very important for me also, you know.
We mentioned earlier that, you know, this on this project, you invited people to collaborate with you, and many of your collaborations in the past have been for other people's projects. But as I was just thinking about you today, you're very in favor of doing collaborations. It seems to me you've been quite open to collaborating with a lot of people over the course of the career. And one of them that I discovered today was very well received was this track that you sang with Bad Bunny a few years ago, which has like over 1 billion streams.
Yeah. Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, it's also amazing the way that, because this is from a Tiny album, his first album, and he's the one who called me, and he called me like, I think we were still like in the pandemic when he called me, and I was like sitting in my house, you know, like sitting around just going like, oh my God, what's going to happen, you know? And then Tiny calls me and he's like, I have this song. And the way he proposed it to me was just so generous and wonderful. He called me and he said, I have a song that I wrote with Benito, and he sings this story, and he's saying something in the song. And I would like you to answer him. Like, what would you answer? And for me, that was like, I was hooked immediately. I was like, just send me the thing. I want to do it now. You know, what would I answer this person? So they had already written the song that Bad Bunny writes and that Benito sang. And for me, it was great. It was great, great. I mean, it was just all a dream, you know, the whole thing, just what happened afterwards when the song came out. Even going to do the video was a dream. I mean, I'd been like sitting in my house wondering what was going to happen. And then I had to go to this desert in the middle of California, and there was a, you know, grand piano, white grand piano sitting in the middle of everything. And I was just, this is crazy. This is like a dream. It was everything was actually pretty surreal. I was like, what pandemic? Yeah, I'm sitting here playing a white piano in the desert, you know, whatever. So it was actually it was a beautiful, beautiful experience for me. I think Benito, I think he's getting more amazing with the years. I think what he's doing now is even better. And Tiny is also so talented and he's so generous and open to mixing all these genres. You know, he's just like, he's the one who's always like bringing in, because he's a fan of pop music and he's a fan of all this music that he wants to put together. And when you listen to Tiny's album, you realize that how he puts so many styles together, and he's pretty incredible. I mean, I felt they're just so genuine in the way they communicated everything to me that and I finally met Benito actually last year in December. He came to play in Mexico and I was able to go and sing with him, which is pretty crazy because I hadn't actually met him. We wrote to each other in Instagram, but we'd never met. And for me, it was like, oh my God, this is incredible, because I've always been a fan. And I think with every album, he's just like changing what we think about reggaeton in Puerto Rico and Latino, and everything is like, he's just becoming this cultural force, which I think is pretty magical. Because I think when I see artists do something, a flip like that, they're doing something and they flip it up and they give you something unexpected, I feel like, oh my God, he did it. It's incredible. It's like, I'm very, very happy of having, and, you know, very thankful of having done that feat. I'm sorry, one more thing that I have to say about it is that, yeah, what you said, the streams, it's crazy. It's like, I'm from a different generation. So for me, like, none of my songs are close to like the one that I did with Bad Bunny, because the streams are just crazy. He's just a different generation and people listen to music so differently. And he's just such a force in himself. Like, I think all the people all the artists that have collaborated with him, that is the song, whatever song we did, that's the song most streamed in our own, you know, our own pages.
Do you think it brought any people to discover you? I mean, I think it was very different. I heard you for the first time in a very different way. It's a totally different sounding kind of track from anything I've ever heard you on. What was it like for you to see yourself in that way? And do you think other people discovered you?
Well, I mean, the funny thing is that Tiny, I think it's the interesting thing about production is that I'm like in one style and then Benito sings in reggaeton style. But I think that that's actually the magic of just being open to collaboration. I feel like that's what happens when you say, because I've always considered myself non-genre, specific, you know, I love just mixing it up. And I feel like being open to that and being open to the stories that songs can tell is definitely pushing aside what you think you're supposed to do. And I think if people discovered me, that's great. And if they, and you know, sometimes, because this, when I first did it, some people were like, oh my God, why did you do that? And I'm like, I enjoyed it so much. It's like, I did it because I wanted to. And, you know, that's like, it's really funny, the reactions that, you know, songs have or whatever. But I think you have to do them from the same place always. You know, you have to do it genuinely from where, you know, your wish to do things, your desire to do things, and more than what other people expect from you. Because that's, I think sometimes people need to be pushed a little, you know, like their expectations or what they think that you should be, you know, you should always be moving that around.
It raises the question for me, what is your job as an artist, and what is your responsibility? Like you just said, part of your job may be to push people or to allow people to expand what their expectations are, at least of what you do.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that wouldn't be my job. I think that would be like just something that I need to do naturally, because I feel like I have to do things that are, you know, that come from inside of me, you know. Maybe as a job, I would say if I can open up little spaces in people's hearts, if I can open up spaces that expressing things that they're not able to with words, and maybe I can give that to them. I can do a song that maybe says something to someone else that's like, oh my God, this is something that I wanted to say and I didn't know how to say it. That would be a job for me. I mean, if there was, because I'm a songwriter and I'm always very enamored with telling stories that are other people, that are mine, but are also other people's, you know, and just doing it naturally, not forcing it and not saying, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that. If you're asking yourself too many questions and if you're very rational about what you're doing, you're going to be stuck. You're going to be trying to write a song for years and not finishing it because you're going to be like, oh my God, I have to do this. I have to do this. You can't think when you're writing or when you're doing music. You have to just let it happen, you know? And I think that sometimes we overthink things. And for me, especially, writing a song is about not thinking too much. It's about letting it be what it needs to be. And sometimes it's not going to be like a super complex, poetic. Sometimes it's going to be a super simple, direct. And sometimes it will be maybe more complex. But I'm just very passionate about writing songs. I love that. You know, I love sitting down and doing a song and wondering where I'm going to take it.
Do you get blocked?
Well, no, I don't get actually blocked, but I do stop writing for a while. I don't write all the time. It's like, I mean, I have a piano in my house and I have a studio. I'm not sitting in the piano all the time. Right now that everything's coming up at the same time, I feel like, and especially writing this book, I definitely did sit around a lot to do the book, to actually write it. So when I finally finished the album, I was like, okay, now I'm able to concentrate in the finishing the book. You know, I actually didn't think I was going to do it. I didn't think I was going to finish it, but I do have to give credit to my friend Raquel Tejerina. She's my editor in the book. And she's the one who would call me once in a while and say, Julieta, have you been working? And I'm like, no, I haven't been working. And she's like, you should probably sit down. And, you know, she was like my, she would push me to keep on going, and I give her credit for finishing the book. So I'm very happy about having that done that project with a friend of mine and to be able to finish it.
So tell me about the book. It's out or it's coming out? I didn't realize it was so close to coming out.
No, it's coming out. It's coming out in five. It's actually my big indie project. We're coming out in five different countries, in Mexico with Almadía, because they're all independent publishers. And I'm doing it in Mexico with Almadía, in Colombia with Laguna, in Argentina with Blati Ríos, in Chile with La Pollera, and in Spain with Las Afueras. So when we finished the book, I was like, I had already spoken to a few publishers before this book. We had spoken about doing maybe a project, maybe a memoir. And then that wouldn't happen because I wasn't really interested in doing it. I was like, I just want to do an album. But then when I started writing this album, I felt like, oh my God, this is like very much connected to memory. And I think I need to do this. And I started writing it. Actually just concentrate because I had already written parts of it along the years. For a long time, I had a lot of text going around. And yeah, it's coming out all together in May. I mean, it's separate because they're two different projects. And the book is called Norteña, Memorias del Comienzo. And the album is called Norteña. So they're all kind of, it's parallel, sort of connects itself in different things that happen in the album and the book, but they're not the same thing. I mean, I mentioned the album at one point in the book, but I don't actually get into how I did it, why, who, where, all that.
So you are in a major presentation, promotion, self-reflection period where you have to talk about your life.
Yeah, it's actually I think I've done enough therapy and I'm prepared for it. it's right now, I was, you know, I keep saying I'm kind of nuts, you know, to have done this all at the same time. But at the same time, that's the way it came out. That's the way when I started. You know, this whole project has been very slow cooked. And I think I like that. I think now I'm going to start doing that all the time, just slow cooking my projects and letting them take their time and just letting them, like, you know, slowly come together. And this has been like the biggest puzzle I put together in my whole career. So it's actually I'm very happy to actually put it out. You know, it's actually, you know, it's beautiful time for me right now to be able to finish this.
It is such a joy to talk to you. You are so fun to talk to. And I'm so grateful for your just openness about everything.
Thank you so much for this interview. It's actually fun. I really enjoyed it.
Julieta, good luck with everything.
Te van a decir cómo se siente y usarán palabras duras.
There she was, my friend Julieta Venegas. What a lovely person to talk to. Something very natural and comforting about talking to her. I'll be back again in your headspace before you know it with another deep dive. Until then, I'll talk to you soon.
This has been a WBGO Studios production. To learn more about WBGO Studios' award-winning podcasts, special concerts, live streams, and more, visit wbgo.org/studios.